Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined as always by the legend Les Thatcher. Another week of WWE television under Paul Levesque is in the books. We'll be discussing what, if anything, we've noticed once again in this second full week where he's had the opportunity to command the office from top to bottom as far as the television show is concerned. A very newsworthy Dynamite. And some other stuff on the docket today. But Les, you know, it occurred to me the other day, and I forgot to mention it, so I figured we should probably start today's show with it, since in the last few weeks, we have picked up some folks who have been kind enough to check out the show on Apple and Spotify, since a bunch of the shows at F4WOnline.com are now no longer behind the paywall, that we are listed in those places as Wrestling Weekly, but we open and close this show every week as Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. So that begs the question, since neither one of us are named Doc, folks might be wondering exactly why we call it Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly.
You know what? You're right. We should. I've thought that same thing. Thank you for being brilliant enough to bring it up. I appreciate it. Doc Young originated this show and the name Wrestling Weekly. He was producing a show for some guy out of Texas. This would have been back in 2000. I'm going to say 2003, 2004, somewhere in there. And so anyway, they had invited me on the show, and the guy who was the host was a real, he was the expert. I was just a guy who might disagree with him, but obviously I didn't know what the hell I was talking about, right? So anyway, and I guess he had run into things like the Doc, as a producer, had run into things like this with this guy. So he contacted me away from the show and said, would you be interested in doing a podcast with me? And I had never, other than, you know, being a guest, I said, yeah, I guess, yeah, I'll try it. So he and I, in 2004, I guess it was, started a pod, you know, Wrestling Weekly. And so we won an award in 2005. I forget what, I mean, I say, not like I got a trophy or something, but, you know, some website picked us as the best wrestling podcast or whatever. But anyway, as you know, Doc got, God, he had this disease that would start eating his system up, eating him up internally. And he started to get weak and everything. So we had to shut this, the show down. And so finally he got better and he got better and he was producing some shows for Brian Alvarez on the Observer Network. And so then he decided he wanted to try a show again, and he called me and said, hey, if I want to talk to Brian and Dave, and if they'll put us on, will you do this show with me? And I said, yeah. So then his health started to fade once again, and we had a couple guys come and fill in. And then how did you and Doc meet? Or, you know, I know it must have been on the internet or by phone or something, but how did you guys get hooked up?
Yeah, it was the internet. Actually, this was when Doc was starting to not feel so great. And Brian actually had him on Wrestling Observer Live. Either he had him on Observer Live or he did a podcast that was behind the paywall with Doc. And they were talking about the show and Doc's history working with you and all sorts of other things. But he mentioned that, you know, he'd not been all that great lately. He'd like to see the show continue. And eventually he'd like to come back to the show because he was going to go take a hiatus. And so he was hoping to find someone else to join you and the other co-host who was a part of the show at the time. And basically was looking for volunteers, more or less, in the Observer website. So I just contacted him and, you know, we talked a little bit and he said, all right, well, come on the show and let's see how it works out.
So you were foolish enough to raise your hand and be a volunteer, right?
Well, you know, no good deed goes unpunished.
and here, how many years ago was that? Do you remember?
11, wow. I think. Let me take a look. I've got every show sitting here on my computer somewhere. Let me find the first. I know the first one I did actually, you know, this is the month of August. The first one, I'm certain I'll find it here, but the first one I did with you guys was in August. So
wow.
We're actually coming up on the anniversary. Let's see if I can get this open here because my computer requires passwords at every level. You know, I'm a paranoid New Yorker, Les. I got a password for everything.
Well, while you're looking. So anyway, then Doc health continued to fade. And Vic was happy. And when I heard Vic's voice, I said, damn, He's good. Got that damn radio voice. I hated him from the beginning. But, yeah, so, and then you and I actually met. What year was it that Mania was at the, in Jersey?
In Jersey. Giants. I don't remember what year that was, but it was the first time they went to Giants or MetLife.
2012. Station. 2012, yeah. Because that the reason I was there, because we were getting interviews lined up for the tournament in L.A.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. So David Jackson, who was the promoter for this tournament in Los Angeles, flew me in, and because we were going to do interviews with some of the guys that were all congregated in New York that week. And so Vic came and joined David and I for breakfast at the hotel. And that's where you and I first hooked up. And then we went to the Fan Fest.
Yes, down in Charlotte.
Yeah. So anyway, we started doing the show. Doc's health got progressively worse. And so it ended up being Vic and I. And then Doc passed away, what's that, what, 3 years now?
Thereabouts, yeah. That's the general. Yeah, about 3 years ago is right.
Yes. So I decided, since it was Doc's, the show was Doc's brainstorm, it was his baby, he recruited me and recruited Vic. This is the Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly, and will always be as far as Vic and I are concerned. So Doc was just a hell of a guy. He really was. What a great, he was a fan, but he, I finally had to cool him down. He would get into corny mode at times. If somebody would, you know, say something negative about the show or about him or myself, and I got all, I said, Jesus, don't argue with these idiots. Don't do that. Right. I mean, he was feisty as hell. The first time he and I got a chance to spend any time together, he ran a show. I'm trying to think what Indiana town it was in. I don't remember, but God rest his soul, Rosie, Maddie, was still alive at the time and living in Cincinnati, and Doc had booked him. So Maddie and I made the trip. And I mean, I wasn't a part of the show. I just went along to hang out and for Doc and I to hook up, and he took some pictures and stuff, but just a hell of a guy, loved the wrestling business. And the way he faded away was just, God, can you imagine? Talk about a great heart. I mean, they were rushing him back to this doctor or that doctor almost every other day for a while. And it just, he kept fading, and his, the disease, whatever it ended up being, was just eating him up internally.
Yeah. And even while he was off the air on Wrestling Weekly, he was still continuing to do production work for Brian for a while afterwards.
Yeah. But yep, we miss him, and he's a good guy. And that's why we call this Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. And, when I'm gone, you can still call it Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. Anyway, I guess we should move forward, Joe.
Okay, so I checked the archives. We're actually a couple of weeks away from our anniversary lesson. First show was August 27th of 2011.
Wow.
Yeah.
Boy, we've been together a long time.
Well, I appreciate you putting up with me. Put it that way.
Well, I appreciate you putting up with and teaching me so much.
Well, let's see what we're learning from Paul Levesque and his booking skills, putting together. Well, he's actually got quite a bit on his plate right now, right? Between head of creative and talent relations. I guess you could really make the argument, even though people have had that title, with Vince being the last word, a lot of folks probably treated him as such. As I remember, one of my jobs, I've been on the air for a long time in radio stations around the country, but before the job I had now, I ran radio stations for a living down in Jacksonville, Florida. And my office happened to be next door to the vice president of programming. And he had also, at one time before being promoted, run those same stations I was running. And the offices, again, were right next to each other. So anytime I said no, you know, they ran right next door. So, and that had to be what it was like to be the head of talent relations or anyone of any import in WWE. If you don't get the answer you like from them, well, I'll just go to Vince. But now,
yep,
if you do that, you can't go anywhere. If Paul Levesque says no, that's it. That's
yes,
it. A couple of weeks under his belt now where he's had the opportunity to put the show together from top to bottom. And before we get into some of the people or even any of the matches or things that stood out as opposed to a Raw review or anything, you know, what is, if anything, is jumping out to you here after a couple of weeks? Are you starting to see some patterns come together, or is it?
Yeah. Well, right. The thing that I see most is the show flows better. And I think I mentioned last week that especially my friend Jim gets crazy because, you know, one wrestler for the next match comes out, and then they break for commercial, and that wrestler is in the ring by themselves for 3 or 4 minutes. Then the next wrestler who has an elaborate entrance has to go through that and come out and, you know, get some stuff in, you know, shoving, pushing or whatever. And then the match will start and the match will be on just Gomez. And they go to commercial again because they've killed so much time, and that drove Jim nuts. And I notice now that they've tried to cure that as best. I mean, you know, something I thought about too, I realized back when I was formatting wrestling shows in the 70s and in the 80s, you had 2 minute commercial breaks, period, end of story, on an hour, you know. And so 2 minutes is not that, but 4 minutes to be standing in the ring by yourself with nothing, I mean, for no reason, you know, it just, and the audience is waiting a long time, but it's hard to get around that is my point. I guess the networks have to have run their commercials. Otherwise the show's not going to be on the damn air, but it's everything runs smoother, I think. And you mentioned the opening 20 minute or 20 promo with the new faces that ended up in a brawl. What'd you think?
Well, I liked it because a lot of times it's, you know, getting the opening 20 minute segment with microphones is not the least bit unusual in WWE. But right. How many times have we watched over the years? And even if the exchange is good, you're sitting there thinking to yourself, these two are supposed to be mortal enemies and they're insulting each other for all this amount of time. Yet nobody throws a punch. Nobody's angry enough to jump the other for something they said or nothing like that. So, you know, seeing this opening segment that actually ended up in a pull apart brawl is what I should have been expecting all this time. Yet it felt like something new and fresh watching it this week.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I'll tell you, as I mentioned to you before we started recording, if you don't see anything else, those of you listening, and I've said this to Vic, if he hadn't seen it yet, if he didn't watch the entire Raw, the best wrestling match I have seen this week was on Raw. And that was Ziggler versus Grable. And damn, these two guys who are both have great amateur backgrounds, by the way, but they combine good wrestling, mat wrestling, switches, takedowns, reversals, with good pro wrestling moves as well, and had one hell of a match. It just didn't last long enough for me. So all I'm going to say here is, if damn, they're going to arrest me.
You've finally gone too far, Thatcher.
I have. They're taking me away. If you're going to repeat anything, Paul, Triple H, put these guys back on next Monday. I want to see and let them have 15 minutes. My point being, it was a beautifully wrestled match. The fans got into it. They understood enough to buy in, and nobody crapped on it. Nobody said boring or get him out of the ring or anything. Couldn't we have one or two like this a show? I mean, and then I can tolerate some of the other nonsensical things. And you know, you and I mentioned this too. Dexter Lumis is back.
Yeah.
Of all the people that I thought.
He was not on my bingo card.
No, mine either. Mine either. But you know, here's the thing. I'll say this. He looks like a wrestler. Looks like an athlete. He's built like an athlete. He looks like a wrestler. And he's believable. But he's still a gimmick. But if I've got to buy into something, if I've got Dexter Lumis or Danhausen, Dexter Lumis or Cassidy, I'll take Dexter. And that's just me. You know, I'm not saying everybody needs to follow the leader, but that's me, you know. So, but he's back. And so I'm curious to see who else is. Oh, I saw a thing this morning.
Yes, I was just about to ask you about this, because now in recent weeks, obviously, we've seen Karrion Kross, and he's obviously in a great spot. Remains to be seen where Dexter Lumis is going to end up. But we've got those reports, thanks to our friend Mike Johnson over at PWInsider.com, that a couple of members of Hit Row are expected to be at tonight's SmackDown taping in Raleigh, North Carolina. So perhaps Hit Row is coming back as well, Les.
I can live without that.
Well, To and, me,
well, I, now
here's the thing.
Go ahead.
You know, without Swerve Scott, who's currently in AEW and one half of the tag team champions, so I don't think he'll be showing up here anytime soon. You know, that thing was centered around him. So what they're going to do with the two gentlemen who are rumored to be at the show tonight, Top Dollar and Ashanti the Adonis, remains to be seen. I imagine there'll be a team of some kind, but whether or not they'll call them Hit Row or have a whole different thing for them, I'm not sure. But I will say this for Paul Levesque. I don't necessarily agree with his assessment of the talent, most of the talent he's brought back that was let go from NXT. But he sees what he sees, he believes what he believes, and he's going to give them that opportunity to prove him right or wrong. I give him credit for that.
I will, too. I will as well. Now, I know Top Dollar, when what is the thing they do on the WWE Network about collectibles?
The collectibles. Apparently, he's not going to be on the next season. But then again, if he's showing up here tonight, perhaps they can get him in.
Yeah. But I'm figuring that's one of the things, too, that Paul liked him on that show. And so, you know, give him the shot here. But let's face it. Let's you and I be honest here. Or here again, I'll throw my friend Jim under the bus, who the last time he saw, Hit Row coming to the ring with their rap, the four of them. He said, I'll never get this 15 minutes back in my life again.
I was warming to the group, but without Strickland. That's the thing I'm thinking. It's going to be difficult.
Yeah, yeah. So there's going to be new faces. Dang on it, coming. And women's tag team tournament. That should be interesting, don't you think?
I do. In the end, I see it, and maybe it's just taking too simple an approach, but with Bayley bringing her crew in, Io Sky and Dakota Kai, and putting them immediately in the tag team title tournament, it seems to me, at least, the most obvious choice would be them, since they're new, they're fresh, they're part of something that obviously is going to be featured. And as I look at the other teams, I do see a couple of interesting combinations, but I don't know that I see anybody that I would put ahead of them as far as the next women's tag team champions, short of Sasha Banks and Naomi returning.
Well, you know, and I, because I'm kind of torn here. If there's one that you're pretty sure not to call the shot on, although it could be Dakota Kai and Sky, you're right. But Rachel Rodriguez is in this thing, and they have been bending her a push. Now, her partner's not all that strong, but then who's to say? Also, from NXT, Nikita Lyons and Zoe Stark.
Yes, you're high on Ms. Stark, right?
Yeah, I am. She strikes me as the best worker I've seen currently in NXT. Lyons is fascinating at first. And she does some good, good things, and she's got a mouth on her. She's a promo, that's for sure. So I would say, you know, it could be any of those three teams would be my call. And so it's really not my call, is it? I'm just saying.
Well, you know, you make an interesting argument, though, for Nikita Lyons and Zoe Stark, because I know, as you just said, you're high on Stark, but from the moment we saw Lyons, you thought there was real potential there. And this is the one title in WWE that was created with the intention of traveling to all three shows, including NXT. So it would not be a huge stretch for an NXT team to win the championships here.
No, it wouldn't. It would not. No, I do, and I still see a lot of promise in Lyons. But, yeah, her moves, I hurt every time she does her finish. I thought, damn, girl. I don't know. It looks kind of strange, too, at first. But anyway, she's different. That's for damn sure. She can talk. That should make it interesting, though. I do, I do think that, since I've got three that I'm thinking can go there. And, of course, that'll narrow down really quick over the next week. But, yeah. And you know what? I think that makes it better, too. You don't know going in, we know who's going to win this. I think that improves things. And Kevin Dunn didn't get the axe. And I don't know if Kevin Dunn trended on Twitter or anyplace else this week, because I don't pay attention to that stuff. But, damn, he got a lot of heat. I know that, for a guy who you never see. people, and I guess it's all just, you know, most of it's hearsay because it's fans, you know.
Well, it's between the rumors and innuendo about Kevin Dunn having a lot of pull with Vince McMahon over the years about who has the right look or right sound or the right accent for television that has gotten him a lot of heat. But, you know, he's also probably given people motion sickness sitting on their couch with the way he's been doing all these camera cuts over the last few years. I'm not sure why they decided to go to that style when he didn't used to be that way. But it's another one of people's pet peeves these days. And I can imagine everybody, including Kevin Dunn, was expecting to be called into the principal's office probably within hours of Paul Levesque being named head of creative and head of talent relations. But as the articles we've seen this week from Fightful point out, Kevin Dunn outlasted Triple H's original pick, who he had down at NXT doing the shows for him. And so right now it appears by default Dunn is safe because they don't have anyone that they think is experienced enough in wrestling, at least, or with the position at all, to replace him with, at least not yet.
Right. And, you know, like I said to you before we started recording, he does great video packages, or somebody does there. You don't want, if it's him, you don't want to lose that edge, because that's an edge that hasn't been beaten in any other company that I've seen thus far. WWE, definitely their video packages, topmost everybody else's. But then, Kevin, we don't care about your opinion of who looks good or what gear they're wearing, but just keep doing those great video packages. And more people are getting rich off of Vince's.
Well, they already got rich. We're just finding out about it.
Wow. The deal is up to what, 20 mil now?
Approximately $20 million. And as we referenced on the show a couple of weeks ago, WWE had to file amended reports with the Securities and Exchange Commissions and various other organizations to reflect that those payments were made. In these hush money payments. And apparently, they now have had to delay. They had a deadline by which they had to turn these in. But uncovering these new payments, obviously, they had to inform the SEC that those reports will be delayed because they have to amend the amending.
This is, oh, wow. How many affairs?
Vince was sitting at home after that second story like, wow, you found those too, huh? Thanks.
Well, Tony Khan may be the creator of more afterbirths than anybody else, but Vince is certainly the creator of more illicit affairs than anybody. Should we check it with Dave and Brian and see if there's a category for that to vote on on the Observer this year?
God forbid, I thought you were going to go somewhere with the term birth. We'll find out that none of his actual kids with Linda are going to be getting this company.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You know what? Stop and think about that.
Oh, no.
Well, I mean, I don't know if there's ever been a question that you know, Stephanie and Shane did belong to the couple. But that's something I haven't heard anybody talk about, yay or nay, you know, like there might be a child involved or something. And Lord knows, with different people popping up, that. If Vince were to pass, God, could that create a mess, huh?
Well, particularly if there is a child, and this is all, we're all just speculating. Please don't go to the internet and say, Victor said, or Les said. We're just having a little soap opera-ish kind of fun with the potential as these payments continue to be uncovered.
Yes.
If straight out of a WWE 20-minute promo segment with the boss, if after he passes, we find out there's somebody out there who has at least as much stock as Shane or Stephanie, that would be something.
Yay. Yes. Wow.
We're going to switch gears here to AEW. Interested in getting your thoughts on yet another bloody edition of AEW Dynamite. Ratings were a win on Wednesday, and they've been regularly clocking W's in that Wednesday time slot. But here's the thing, and listen, I don't want to make too much out of this, but I do think it's worth mentioning. I don't want to make too much out of it because Paul Levesque has only been doing this for a few weeks. So it's an extremely small sample size, and he's benefiting from the curiosity factor that has brought more people to see exactly what he's going to be doing. But it's interesting to me that he's gotten a little bit of a bump the last few weeks on Raw, And he's just doing, and I don't mean this in a disparaging way at all, he's doing ordinary booking. He's just giving you a wrestling show. And the audience has grown in the last few weeks. Tony has been spending a lot of time, and this show is a great example. He gave you title matches. He gave you stipulation matches. He gave you tornado tag matches, coffin matches. He put out the tournament bracket for another new tournament, which we'll talk about in a second. And he's got blood at the beginning of the show, blood at the end of the show, and yet the show stays in its basic range that it's been in for I don't know how long now, Les. I don't want to, like I said, I don't want to make too much out of that, but are you seeing something here? Is that sending you any kind of message at this very early stage of Paul Levesque's tenure?
I don't know a message necessarily, but yeah, I think it is a message in terms of Paul because, well, first of all, people are interested to see if there will be changes, and if so, what changes in WWE programming. So yeah, I think that curiosity helps out a little bit, but I think if you see the numbers continue to stay or rise a little bit, then it means that, you know, the word, you know, when I say this is strictly old school, but realize, like here in Knoxville, 1968, when I first wrestled here, the promoter, John Kazan, had no television. And young people look at me and say, how did anybody know you were wrestling, right? Posters, newspaper ads, but more as importantly, word of mouth. Giving the people great finishes, hot finishes, stuff, controversial stuff that they're going to go home and say to their neighbors or their friends, man, you should have gone to wrestling with me, or you should have watched wrestling with me Friday night. Man, this is what happened. And so we continue. We drew people, you know. And so word of mouth is important. Of course, it can't match television and what we're talking about here in this current day and age, but it helps. And I think that's part of what Paul is seeing. But you're right. And I think part of the drop for AEW is, you know, people are, okay, well, I've been watching this for 2.5 years. And regardless of how positive so many people have been, there are going to be people who say, well, I'm not crazy about that, or I don't like this, or this or that, or I see something on another channel, or I got some, you know. So the guild is off the lily, as the old saying goes. And so it's, and so much of this stuff is becoming commonplace because I keep saying and will continue to say until they put me in a box and put me in the ground, that he's pushing things too hard, and they become commonplace, and then there's nothing exciting about them. He's going to start a trios tag team tournament. Okay, why, whatever. But you're right. Title matches, stipulation matches, blood, women, afterbirth, and your numbers came up a little bit, but not completely. You need to start thinking about less, less is more in this business. It's said over and over and over and over. If you give everything away, there's nothing to make the people want to buy something. And he certainly is giving, and giving to the point that he's going to wear a lot of this stuff. The blood, for example, as I've said on here, and again, for those from Apple and Spotify and the other formats that have joined us, I have bled, I don't know how many times in a wrestling career, and I have no problem with it. Done properly and done in the, you know, at the right time. Did both of these matches need blood? Not necessarily, but if you're going to give them both blood, I would have given these two matches on two different nights. And, you know, now I thought Darby and the big guy, now, unlike Brian, I listened to Brian and Vinny talk about it a little bit. Brian had multiple orgasms over the finish. I didn't. But it was sharp and quick, and the way it went worked really well. But, man, they came up with juice less than a minute into this thing. And, wow, you know. And then we'll get to the last match in a minute here. But then the rest of the show, we had run-ins. We had, I don't know, there was at least the teases or talkabouts or promos or matches involving, I think, at least 8 angles over 2 hours, which is about 6 too many, to be honest. because people can't concentrate on all that. They just can't. And wow, I know, I don't know what he means by trainer, but I saw that Madison Rain apparently was hired not only to wrestle, but as a trainer.
Coach, I think is the term they used.
Did he say coach?
Yes.
Okay. Maybe. But anyway, I, again, Brian thought that Jade led this match. Brian, whatever it is you're smoking in Seattle, send me some. Okay. Here's Jade's match. Kick, punch, pose. Kick, punch, pose. Kick, punch. Am I getting that right? Kick, punch, pose. After watching her and Madison Rain, I never, honestly, coming into this match, I wasn't thinking one way or the other. She's a great worker. She's a bad worker. She's, because I haven't seen her in a long time. But she's been in the business now, what, 6 years, I'm guessing?
A little more than that, I think.
Or more?
Yeah.
Yeah. This match was not good. And Jade, I said to you, and I'll say it here, I don't know this lady. She has a great look. I understand she is a great athlete. She is not a great wrestler as of yet, nor she may never be. If she's trained with Dustin Reynolds, she has trained with Brian Danielson, and this is what I'm seeing, punch, kick, pose. I don't get it. And I've said, I don't know this lady, and again, I see a lot of potential, but it's not there. And again, I say, I don't put championship belts on people that can't be versatile and carry whoever their opponent happens to be. That's just a rule of thumb for me. And she is not that person. So, and she keeps dropping those elbows on her poses. And again, my background as a competitive bodybuilder, also as a bodybuilding judge, when you hit that double by, darling, you kick those elbows up, not drop them down. You kick them up and turn those fists in toward your shoulders, which brings the peak of the biceps up a little bit. Be happy to help you if you need it. There was so much going on this show, and the run-in at the end, I thought, oh, my God. Now, that's another thing. There were more afterbursts throughout this show. If I were booking this, if Corny were booking this, if Leo Garibaldi, Eddie Graham, George Scott, the only run-in would have been in the main event with the big schmoz that they had at the bitter end to bring Punk back. And was that the Lionheart from years ago? No, it was not. It was a smarter Chris Jericho who knows how to pace himself at this age. They had a hell of a match. They did. It worked well. And Corny, if you didn't notice, Mox can work. I mean, he really can. The only thing I – here again, you know me, I cross T's, dot I's. I get crazy about little details. When Jericho tore the earring out, I laughed. Not because I'm sadistic, but when Harley and I first started doing training camps together, you know, he had kids with – nose rings and earrings and eyebrow rings. And Harley would say, I can take that out for you. Well, unclip. No, no, don't unclip it. I'll get it. And years ago, that would have been the case. I mean, it would have, for those who've never seen, I have an earring. If I had one when I had wrestled, it would have come out every night by me taking it out, not somebody tearing it out. It worked. I think John oversold it, quite frankly, a little bit too much. But they had ended up having a much better match than I expected. And that schmoz at the end really, it started to be too long to, you know, and we've had that conversation about AEW run-ins too. Until I heard Punk's music hit, and I thought, okay, I know where they're going with this. But that should have climaxed the show, and there should have been nothing. The whole rest of the show should have been built to that. I mean, should have taken us to that big climax. And it. So there again, I don't know Tony Khan. I hear he's a great, great young man, but he's trying to do too much too soon, and it's just he's wasting a lot of this. I truly believe that.
got something I want to bring up about these trio titles that's grinding my gears, and we'll look ahead to what we already know about next week's Dynamite in just a second. But Les, I want to take the opportunity, since you helpfully pointed out that not only do you offer instruction at your weekend training camps on everything from wrestling to announcing to booking to commentating, you can even offer some bodybuilding tips if there are any bodybuilders out there who are interested in learning from the legend Les Thatcher. So now's a good opportunity to let everybody know where they can get a hold of you for those kinds of things.
Well, yes, I enjoy doing, I will do one-day seminars. I enjoy the weekends more. I think we get some more done, and the people that come to those seminars actually go away with a lot more help. But anyway, if you'd be interested in me doing either a one-day or a weekend, you can reach me, lesthatcher28@gmail.com. And feel free to drop me a line. I'd be more than happy to send you out the information of what I do on these things, and cost and travel and everything, you know, concerning that. So yes, I would love to help out if I can, pay it forward and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, drop me a line and let's see what we can do for your promotion or your group.
So with respect to these AEW Trios titles, like them or not, another damn tournament in AEW. You got such a kick out of that when I said that a few weeks ago. I'm looking at these brackets, and I see some interesting teams. Will Ospreay and Aussie Open, so there's a New Japan contingent here. You've got, obviously, the Death Triangle of Pac, who will be returning to America after some successful defenses overseas of the AEW All-Atlantic title with Rey Fénix and Penta. You've also got the House of Black in there. Well, I guess hopefully get an on-television explanation of the Trust Busters. If only I had been recording when we were off the air, folks. You listening to me explain the Trust Busters to Les, and I'm just imagining the look on his face as I'm laying this gimmick out. That would have been worth the price of admission. So here's what grinds my gears about this bracket as I see it. It's next week's match between the Bucks and a mystery partner, since Adam Page turned them down when the Bucks offered.
Thank God. Let me interject. I cheered. I came off the couch and said, yes, thank you.
I didn't get the impression that our potential reunion is off the table, but I understood. But let me give Tony a little credit. It made sense in the context of the show, because the Dark Order are the guys who've been there for him, and they're in the tournament, so Paige is going to have their back. I get it. But the match with the Bucks and the mystery partner, who I've been telling you for several weeks, and it's, you know, you don't have to be Karnak to figure this out, is Kenny Omega, more than likely. It could be somebody else, but that's my personal expectation, and I'd be surprised if it's anybody else. Maybe I'll have to eat all of this next week if it's a different partner. But because my expectation is that it's Kenny Omega, I rolled my eyes seeing that the matchup next week is the Bucks and their mystery partner against Andrade, Rush, and Dragon Lee. Because whether you liked it as a wrestling match or just a spot fest for you, or if it worked terrifically for you, that Tornado Tag Team match was, in fact, a spectacle this past week, and it was a very nice showcase win for Andrade and Rush. I have no issue with the Bucks and Kenny beating them in a month or 2 months, but now it just felt like you threw that match there so that people could actually see them win, hoping that it'll mean something when you watch the Bucks beat them next week. And that just bothered me, because if that's what you were going to do, then Andrade and Rush should have been on TV for the last month running through people.
Yeah, I agree with you. I do. The only thing I didn't like about the Trios match Wednesday is it's the thing that bothers me most about Lucha is when you see six guys all taking their spot, standing where they belong, and waiting for the next two guys to do their shit. You lose me there. And when there were a couple points like that where everybody, Andrade's waiting for so-and-so to do, and so they get their thing, and then so-and-so. Am I making myself clear, or am I being just confusing?
No, I get where you're coming from. It's actually one of those pet peeves you have occasionally with wrestlers that we've seen who are waiting for or have their head up when they should have their head down, or their arms come out too soon if somebody's coming at them. You want it to look like, oh my goodness, I'm caught by surprise by this, as opposed to standing there prepared and the guy waiting for you to be ready before he does whatever it is he's going to do.
Yes, I like to make the people think, is that real or is that not? Opposed to, hey, that's all choreographed. That looks great. Where's the calliope and the elephants and the peanuts? But that's my biggest thing about that. But yeah, I don't know. You know, everybody, I'm assuming everybody thinks that the Bucks and Young and Mystery Partner are going to win this thing. And for that reason only, I would change. And I don't know, there again, it wouldn't be the Trust Busters. You know, I mentioned this to you. I forgot to mention this last week, but somebody had posted on Facebook a rant by a fan that had been put up on TikTok, and which I don't have, by the way. But this guy was on a Cornette-type rant. Okay, you gave me John Moxley's putting his title on the line against Mance Warner. Who the hell's Mance Warner? Only he was using a lot bluer language than I'm using. Why the hell should I care? And you're not telling me anything about it. And when I hear that, how many times have we talked about this, that they just put somebody out there and figure, you must know who that is. Give me background. Give me a reason to buy into these people. And he's right. Mance Warner had never wrestled, as far as I know, 1 minute in AEW, and yet here he is in a title match.
Well, it's the thing that you're going to roll your eyes even harder now. He actually had a win on one of the internet shows.
Oh, yes, my eyes are rolling.
Yes.
You're absolutely right. You bet your ass they're rolling. If you're pushing a guy, featuring a guy on your major show, then you get him on your major show and let me know why I'm seeing him featured. When I say me, the fan base completely. But then that comes back to, I heard Brian and Vinny talking about the Trust Busters. They didn't know who Slim J was. I do. He wrestled in Cornelia, Georgia at the NWA group. We've done camps down there, and I know Slim J. He's been around a while. But again, I bet there's a bunch of fans that don't have, like myself, when I say when you say Trust Busters, to me, I didn't know the story behind that.
Right.
And so to me, trust, you're Trust Busters, me, I shouldn't trust you because you bust that. And then Vic tells me, no, it comes back to the whole
trust fund
thing. Yeah. Dr. Daivari, and he's wealthy, and it's a trust fund. Thank you. Thanks. That my partner explains it to me today when I'm hearing about it for the past week and don't have a clue. Take the time. And I say this, never mind Tony Khan, Hunter Hearst Helmsley, or whoever the hell's booking and fill your, give background. The more background you give to your talent, the more apt you are to draw people in to care about them or hate them or, you know, whatever. But the more you, well, it's time to think about it this way. When you watch a movie and the main characters, you get background from the beginning to the, because the story is building. The same should be in wrestling. Or if you're reading a book, they start, if I'm a big Jack Reacher fan, I wish I had, they've got a new series with a guy big enough to be Jack Reacher now. But anyway, you go back and you start with the beginning. And why is Jack Reacher on the road? And who is he? And what's he done? You build a foundation for me to get a grip on this character and why I should care. And that's what's missing here. And it's not about old school, new school. It's just about good common sense and making people aware of what the product that you're pushing.
I want to give Tony Khan a little credit for something. And I was just reminded of it. Looking over our notes here for today's show, I did not mention one of the things I liked about Raw this week was that since they're headed to Toronto soon, Damian Priest made the challenge to Edge. And so you've got a match set up for Raw more than a week or more than 15 minutes in advance. You know, one of the things with Vince in these last few years is that they'd advertise stuff a couple days before, then they wouldn't do it on the show. And so I like the fact that Paul Levesque has got something here he wants to get out in front of and draw people to it because it's going to be in Edge's hometown, which of course now, you know, I'm biting my nails about. Poor Edge going back to his hometown, but they set something up in a few weeks in a place that means a lot to Edge and where the people really care about him. So the reaction should be off the page and you've got a couple of weeks to get ready for it. Anticipate. One thing Tony Khan has always been good at from day one, Les, is that you never leave any of his shows without knowing what's going to be on the next show and maybe the next two shows.
Yeah.
To that end,
I agree.
We're looking at Dynamite next week, and we've got a match in that trios tournament, the aforementioned Bucks and their mystery partner against Andrade, Rush and Dragon Lee. A showcase match, which what I assume it's going to be a showcase match for Toni Storm, because it looks like she's going to be getting the next shot at the AEW World's Women's Champion Thunder Rosa. But the thing that got my attention here, it's already been advertised, but you'll see a confrontation on Rampage tonight as we record this between Bryan Danielson and Daniel Garcia. Just speaking back and forth, nothing physical. But it's setting up on next Dynamite a 2 out of 3 falls match between Danielson and Garcia. And so now I'm very interested in this follow-up, Les, and seeing where this goes, because one of my concerns was about Jericho sort of stealing Garcia's spotlight. I don't know that, I wouldn't say that that's happened in the last few weeks, and Garcia's going to get another opportunity to really show what he's got.
Yeah, that's true. And then promo two, Garcia mentioned that he respected, you know,
yes,
Danielson. So there's a chance that he could end up with the Blackpool guys, a defector, if you will. I don't know how anyone could defect from loving Chris Jericho. I just don't know. But it's possible, I suppose.
One last item of business on this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. But before we get there, there is a reason. I kind of feel like in some way they're tied together. I want to give you the opportunity to let everybody know where they can get themselves some great wrestling from stars before they were stars, because you had a chance to see so many people when they were on their way up, in large part because they were in your gyms training to become the next round of great ones.
That is true. Yes, what Vic's talking about is Wrestling from the Heartland, the Lost Developmental Tapes, Volumes 1 and 2. They're both over 6 hours of content, and each are 2 DVD sets. Matches, interviews, and extras. Joe Dombrowski, who currently does the MLW shows and was part of StarCast, he's in Mexico. Joe's all over the place now. Anyway, we do the voiceover. Joe does most of the play-by-play, and I cover background on the wrestlers. And, you can see on this guys like John Cena, Eddie Guerrero, guys who came through HWA, and plus Nigel McGuinness, guys who were just getting their feet wet. Talking about one of the head producers at AEW, BJ Whitmer, who was also started with me, Shark Boy. But anyway, they're all those guys are on this and more for that matter. And you can get those at joe-dombrowski.com or prowrestlinglibrary.com. And the Brian Pillman Show's Anthology 20-year anniversary, 4 DVD set, over 15 hours of content, all 4 of the great shows of 98, 99, 2000, 2001, matches, interviews, auction footage, awards, and God knows how many extras all over the place. And those are available at PillmanShows.com or the 2 addresses I mentioned earlier, joe-dombrowski.com or prowrestlinglibrary.com. And also now, on the PillmanShows.com, if you go to the About icon and click on, you'll see my name on there. And Joe is in the process, he and his webmaster, of putting up all the stuff that we'd been downloaded off the old Elite Pro Wrestling Training website. So right now up there are some pictures, magazine covers, and so forth and so on. So check it all out. And believe me, Vic, you've seen all the videos. You've seen the Wrestling for the Heartland. You've seen the Pillman. Would you say they're worth the time?
They're all excellent. And that's not just me saying that because we've been together for 11 years, partner. It's because you got the goods, man. I mean, those Pillman shows were legendary in their time and revolutionary in their time, because that was a time where there were 3 major companies in America and you could never see their stars in the same place together, let alone wrestling each other. And that those events were the only places maybe on earth that you could see that at that point in time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm very proud of those shows. So check them out, folks, if you're interested. I believe you will enjoy them all. I guess we need to mention T-shirts here real quick.
Go right ahead.
Frisco Booster Tees. Yeah, the first pro wrestling T-shirt ever on the market, put out in 1972 by Jack Jerry and myself. Artwork by Jerry the King Lawler, and you can get that at Pro Wrestling Tees. And also, if you're interested, there's an I'm a Les Thatcher Guy T-shirt available there as well.
All right, so I asked you to talk about those things that you are offering, in part because I knew obviously you were going to plug those Heartland Wrestling DVDs, because Les, you ran Heartland Wrestling like a territory that you would have wrestled in back in the day, much like Jim Cornette and Danny Davis ran Ohio Valley Wrestling. A lot of folks may not realize that not only was HWA a developmental territory for WWE, but it was for a period of time a developmental territory for WCW. So when it comes to putting together a territory-style promotion, you know what you're doing. And I bring all of that up in the aftermath of the Ric Flair's Last Match promotion in the last couple of weeks, where Conrad Thompson did a really cool thing in getting all the trademarks necessary for Jim Crockett Promotions. And as I understand it, the plan was to transfer all of that intellectual property to David Crockett after the show, which is also a very nice touch. But I bring all of that up because he really recreated the set, the feel. They had the JCP Blazers on. It was a whole nice touch around the show that obviously was built around someone who is a legend of Jim Crockett Promotions in Ric Flair. And if you were wondering what was next, if anything, not for Ric Flair, but for Conrad Thompson, he filed an interesting trademark this week: Southwest Championship Wrestling. Now, you know this, Les, but SCW is a promotion owned by Joe Blanchard and run out of San Antonio, Texas, from approximately the late 70s, I think 78, to the mid-80s, before they went out of business when Vince was just running roughshod over everybody. And in fact, it was Southwest Championship Wrestling that actually had the time slot on the USA Network, which WWE took over and occupies to this day.
Yep, that's right, absolutely. And so Conrad is looking to do something similar with Southwest Wrestling that he did with Jim Crockett Promotions and the Flair thing. Now, and I know he had mentioned to Booker T about doing his final match in a year, and Booker T said no. Said he probably will never do his final match.
Yeah.
He may come back at age 95. You know what? Will it work? I think it's going to be a roll of the dice. I mean, I'm not saying it won't work and they won't draw. I don't know if Conrad's expecting to draw what he did for the Flair thing in these territorial things. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I'm saying it's probably a lot harder than pulling the people for the Flair, you know, the one for Rick.
That's the thing. Who is the name that's going to pull people into Southwest Championship Wrestling? Has he convinced Tully to wrestle? And how much will that draw at this point, too? Is there a curiosity factor for Tully Blanchard? And is Tully even interested?
Sure.
Has he answered the phone? Who knows?
Yeah, that's true, too. Yeah. So I can see. There had been talk of a fan fest here in Knoxville. Fuller had brought that up over a year ago, and we had talked about it, and he decided against doing it. I think it would have worked, you know, and I still believe they probably would. But, it just depends. I don't know if Southwest would be that quick. With the old Atlanta promotion, that's, I don't know. I think he's gambling, which I'm sure Conrad is a gambler in his own right anyway. I mean, in terms of being a real estate, investor and so forth, that's a gamble. But, I think if he's expecting everything to be as red hot as the Flair thing, I don't know that it would be that hot, but I think it's feasible and it's possible to draw a decent crowd and to end up in the black.
Yeah. I'm curious. Obviously this is in the beginning stages. We don't know how far along Conrad is in putting something together or when that thing is going to happen. If it does happen, I wonder who the linchpin would be for Southwest Championship Wrestling, because while there were some really interesting things that happened there over its run, including a tremendous series of feuds between Tully Blanchard and Wahoo McDaniel, the Funks were in and out of there a lot working with Blanchard. Gino Hernandez spent some time there as well. You know, is there
one of my former tag team partners, Scott Casey?
That's right.
Was a big feature there too. And I can tell you right now, if Scott says he'll wrestle, I'll go break his leg so we can't. No, Scotty, Scotty's a dear friend and we still stay in touch. But again, I don't know who they would figure into a match, one single match like they did with Flair.
Yeah, or that that the name Southwest Championship Wrestling will carry the same cachet. You know what I mean?
Right. Sure. I don't know if that would work or not. Like I say, Obviously, Conrad is a promoter, and just as obviously in anything like this he's talking about, you know, it's going to be a roll of the dice. But, you know, that's promotion. You know, it really is. God, I can't even, you know, over the last 62 years, think of the storylines or angles, as we call them, that you thought, man, this is going to draw money, and it didn't draw anything. And then some storyline that you're not sure you even should have done draws like crazy, you know. So it comes down to, you know, you got to try to use, you know, your historical remembrances of what has worked, and you've also got to be able to ready to throw some against the wall to see if it's going to stick.
Don't know if, well, Conrad's a smart guy. I imagine he's already talked to Jeff Jarrett about this, whether or not it's something they could ever make happen. I have no idea, because I'm not sure who owns the intellectual property to Memphis Wrestling at this point anymore. But I have to believe, since Jeff was involved in this show, obviously, in the main event with Ric Flair, that, and he has a podcast with Conrad, that Conrad has talked to Jeff about perhaps doing a Memphis Wrestling show at some point, right?
I would say you better talk to Jeff's dad.
Well, that too.
Before he talks to Jeff. Because, well, actually, the old man, Jerry and Lawler, you know, were the prime movers and shakers after, you know, after the, Jerry got the territory and took it, you know, took Memphis away from Gulas Welch. So, yeah, you would have to involve Lawler and Jerry. I mean, or if you don't, you're going to insult somebody. But yeah, it's possible. It's possible. But again, like I say, I don't know that. I'm like you. I don't know that Southwest would do it, because it's been gone for so long. And again, who would be the outstanding featured guy that you would bring back and push?
Yeah, that's the question that remains to be seen. And I realize I've mentioned Tully Blanchard a lot here. For folks who don't know, Southwest Championship Wrestling was owned by his dad, Joe Blanchard, during that entire run.
Exactly. And you're right, so many of those guys are dead or too old. And I did read where Flair says, I passed out twice in that match. I thought, no. Yes, Rick, we knew that. Scared. I'll tell you, I'm seeing a lot of negative feedback now from guys who just had kept quiet. And it's sad. But they're right. This is not the memory they want. And the guys I'm talking about are probably the guys from my generation who are, you know, a lot of them are saying they don't want to see him that way. And I don't either. God love him. But, you know, yeah, I don't know. Conrad had talked about getting involved with Ron Fuller in this deal in Knoxville. In fact, Ron had gone to, Conrad believes, lives in Huntsville, Alabama. And Ron had gone down there and spent a couple of days with him. And I, as far as I know, nothing ever came from it, or nothing has. And I know Ron had more or less escaped the plans of doing the fan fest here for whatever reason. So I don't know.
Now, for all we know, Conrad filed that idea away. It might be something else on his drawing board, since he appears to be going around the territories.
Yeah, could be. Could be very well.
Well, brother, I think we've got everything covered here for this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. Thank goodness that most of the extreme heat around the country over the last couple of weeks has broken. Wow. So you might be able to actually go out and enjoy a cool breeze.
Yes, that's true. And I want to report on my purchasing gasoline this morning at Sam's Club in Knoxville, Tennessee, at $3.42 a gallon.
Well, you've just created a bunch of irate New Yorkers and Californians, I can promise you.
It's like they're giving it away here, right?
Practically, compared to the prices in those two places. You can't even find gas stations below 60th Street in New York anymore. They've actually done articles and news program, TV news pieces about it, because the real estate is so expensive in New York that folks have been going in and offering, well, this is, you know, going back more than a decade now, that have been offering gas stations in the city such big money for those spaces to put up high-rise buildings that it is impossible to find a gas station below 60th Street in Manhattan, which means when you do find one, they're going to gouge you, brother, because they know you got a long way to go for the next one.
Ah, those New Yorkers, they're slick, aren't they? big city boys.
That's right. We're going to wrap up this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. For the legend, Les Thatcher, my name is Victor Sosa. Thank you so much for taking time out of your weekend to spend a little bit of it here with us. And we'll talk to you again next week.